You're listening to the Social Media Church Podcast, a place for conversations with church leaders about social media. I am your host, DJ Chuang. You can connect with the conversations that are here at Social Media Church at socialmediachurch.net. And we have buttons and links to Twitter and Facebook, Pinterest, YouTube, and we have a voicemail number that you can call into. The number is 9493-543216. And that's why I picked the number. I just realized it's kind of a peculiar number. It's not real memorable, but when you say it in a particular way, as I just did. On this episode, I chat with Jason Kasten, who has quite an impressive resume, and he currently works with TD Jakes Ministries. They're in the Dallas area and also at the Potter's House, and probably a number of projects that are associated with that entire enterprise. And when I first noticed Jason, his resume is quite impressive. Off of his LinkedIn summary, it includes things like leading a project management team of over 25 developers. He's a certified content management developer with Ektron and Joomla, front-end development, does back-end too, author of two books on business development, podcast development specialist, ebook creator, self-publishing specialist, internet church specialist, new media developer, social media and mobile web developer as well. And so it was with fear and trepidation that I initiated contact with him. And as you'll hear in my conversation with him, he's actually very approachable and conversational. So we had a great chat about how we got into technology and social media. And in his particular work right now with the Potter's House and TD Jakes, I wanted to find out what they were doing with their internet campus, which sometimes is referred to there as iCampus, and how do they integrate social media into the life of the church. What he does in particular with keeping up with technological developments, which is one of his primary roles there on a team of tech people there on a pretty large ministry there in Dallas that has not only national but international impact. And then we breach the subject of whether Bishop Jakes uses a ghost writer or not on his Twitter account. And then we also touch on what adjustments or strategy they've had to use in a more multicultural context. Here's my conversation with Jason Kasten. I've been kind of in the social media world since it started up. Actually, before that, I was in the bulletin board world with modems.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so dial-up modems and all that. And when I was in college, I graduated in 88 from Virginia Tech. Email was just starting to hit college campuses, and man, I was eager to get one. I couldn't get one. And I think it was for like 91 or 92 when CompuServe, AOL, and Prodigy came online.
Yeah,
that normal people could finally get email, and the internet came up maybe 97, 98, something like that,
mm-hmm.
when it became more mainstream, and then now we have broadband, and we're in the 21st century, and the church is still mostly offline, so I'm kind of like, man, something's not right.
I know you're right. I know you're right.
Yeah, so there's a huge fear factor thing, and perceptions of time. And it could eat up time. I mean, that's always true with anything, really. But just technology gets a bad rap.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know that's right. You're preaching to the choir.
Yeah. So how'd you get into all this world?
If I start back, I think probably I'm originally from Chicago. So I left Chicago about, let's say, 2007. And I came out to Irvine, California. And I was working regular corporate America guy, wasn't thinking about church at all, wasn't raised in a church. And a church, actually, Crenshaw Christian Center in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. reached out to me and asked me, did I want to come work with them? So I went, you know, checked it out. And looking at it from a strictly corporate perspective, you know, I thought, well, they won't be able to pay me what I'm worth, blah, 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 and all that good stuff. But as I started to look at what they needed and how I could impact it and stuff like that, then I started to see that they were basically giving me the whole web presence to run on my own. And that kind of intrigued me as more of a challenge. So that was the start of it. And then going further along, you see megachurches from the outside, they look like they have everything going together. And you don't know once you get on the inside that it really takes a lot of effort to pull that stuff off. Mm-hmm. And stuff you think that's happening with 10 or 12 people is really one or two people doing a lot of tasks. So that's what when I was in there, I learned that everything going on with the internet was basically as much as I could come up with whatever concept, whatever I wanted to do, they gave me free rein. And I really, really enjoyed that. And that was kind of the basis for me putting together the strategy for the book, because I just basically did a brain dump of what I did in a week there, and as well as when I transitioned to Dallas in 2010 and started working with T.D. Jakes Ministries. So that was kind of the premise of the entire thing, just a chance interview. And from there, started seeing the impact I could make as far as where technology was going and trying to make sure the church was there. And then also educating leaders in the church as far as how to utilize technology, not fear it, and dumbing down a lot of the stuff that tech geeks like ourselves talk about, so that the normal people can understand it and realize that, you know, we are all trying to get to the same goal, and we're trying to use technology as a ministry tool.
So as you engage people as an author and also a church staff leader and engage volunteers, what are the top issues that people run into that keep them from getting more online?
Oh, the main number one issue is understanding it, lack of understanding. So as I'm engaging people, I think initially they are engaged with me as looking at me as a staff member of a ministry they recognize, which would be like a T.D. Jakes Ministries. They're just explaining to them what we do, how large our team is or small our team is to have the impact we have. Then it becomes more real for them. They think from the outside looking in, we have a team of 25 people. And when I tell them, no, it's about five or six, you know, sometimes three or four, you know, people are pulled in other places. We just happen to be able to do what we know how to do, and we do it well. And then also as an author, that the whole reason for the book was not any type of financial gain or notoriety. The whole point of the book was to take what I did and basically, as I said, do a brain dump and give churches, smaller churches or any type of church, a way to do the stuff that these churches I'm working with do week in and week out, but just be able to pull it from a book. You might not be able to hire a Jason Kasten or be able to get me to come out and speak at your church and train, but you can get the book and see how we do these things week in and week out. And that was the whole purpose for the book.
That's fantastic. So tell us more about what you do at the Potter's House and T.D. Jakes' whole suite of ministries and programs and conferences and books and whatever else. Which parts of those are you involved with, and what does it take five people to do?
Oh, man. I touch on pretty much everything that happens online, personally, because I kind of have a variety of roles. I interact with, say, the IT team, in that sometimes I have some programming skills and actually heads down coding skills. So I get in there and do the back end stuff sometimes, as well as the online store stuff with the digital downloads and running the online store and e-commerce. On the other side, we call the marketing side, then that's where the front end stuff you see with the websites, you know, building the websites from scratch, doing the mobile stuff you see. So developing mobile sites, mobile apps, make sure there's a whole bunch of multimedia on the sites, because that seems to be what people consume a lot of. Social media, the entire, you know, the social media strategy. I have a manager that I report to who helps develop the social media strategy. And then I either provide the technical aspect of it or also help with the social media strategy part of it. So, and then now, the main part of what I do, let's put all that together, and then the main part of what I do is whatever's new out there. You know, like for now, we see internet TV coming down the line and new ways to interact with the online streams and stuff like that. That's my main job with the ministry. Keep the ministry on the fringe, and wherever technology is going, make sure the ministry is there. And so that's the main job that they look to me for, is what's new, what's hot, what's coming down the line, and how can we make sure we're there.
Fantastic. So we've got a lot to just keep up with you, just as you're keeping up with technology. And I know you've got an active blog that you try to share as much time as you have to share with the church at large, as well as the church that you're at. So thank you for doing that.
All right, Yeah, I think that's the easy part as far as for me is regardless of how many things I'm doing, just being able to sit down and take, 20 minutes and write a blog as far as what new technology is coming down the line. I just want to keep churches updated as far as what's new, and just basically bring it down to a level where they can understand how this technology will be able to help them, instead of looking at it, which typical viewpoint of, oh, here's something new. It's only been 2 weeks and here's a new technology we got to learn. We haven't even gotten ahead of the other technologies. And I say, here's a bite-sized way to consume this new technology and integrate it into your plan. And it may take a lot of time for initial learning curve, but eventually you get into the groove and be able to use this as a great tool of ministry.
Well, here's one thing I kind of see from my vantage point, and wanted to get your feedback and reaction. So we've got this whole world of technology, which includes hardware and software, sound and video, and the physical space, and then the online space. And then you've got traditional media and media ministry, which TD Jakes has a tremendous history in being a pioneer and a leading voice in that space. And you got social media, which has been just online and now has become mobile. So on this podcast, it's a space for a conversation with church leaders about social media. So how do you put your hands around the part that's social media, and how do you move from a traditional media mindset, which is broadcast, one-way communication, more towards social media, which is two-way communication?
Oh, well, I think we started off with our social media, and we did have to transition the mindset of the ministry to social media, and I'll get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. The original strategy of social media was threefold, and it was to inspire, inform, and communicate. So I want to make sure that every day we start off with inspiration. Make sure that we kept a steady line of information coming through our social media channels. And then, of course, two-way, we're not just broadcasting to you, but two-way communication. So initially, when we started this strategy out, the ministry was not, did not fully embrace it as far as the entire ministry. So it took us, the pioneers of the team that I was on and a few other people, to just start pushing out the content as we could pull it from people and started building this online audience. Now, the ministry, once they saw how large the audience grew, that's when the paradigm shift started to come. And therefore, they saw that every weekend service, let's say you get typical service might have 10, 20,000 people in the actual sanctuary or for the variety of services. Well, when you start seeing 10 or 20,000 online, then you have to start reevaluating how you're ministering to these people, and church as you know it has now changed. So what we did was we had to start educating them as far as how to take the ministry to the people, because wherever these people's laptops, computers, mobile devices are, or internet TVs, wherever they're picking you up at, that's where the ministry is to them, as opposed to coming into your four walls. And so that shift is what changed how we did ministry. And then once we educated the executives, of course, because they had been doing ministry for 10 years, and in a matter of 2 years, you're seeing the paradigm shift, then we just had to get them on board, and that just changes everything. So now we just integrate social media into everything we're doing, because everybody wants to, in addition to having the ministry brought to them, and in this new generation that we have, people also want to be able to see behind the curtain. What goes on behind the scenes? How does this ministry work? And that's what social media does. And, of course, get more access to the leaders of the ministry.
So which part of the curtain do you pull back to show people, and how do you do it?
We pull back basically the main thing that our audience seems to enjoy the most is we pull back the curtain to get access to Bishop Jakes. Mm-hmm. So, for example, number one thing is you can talk directly to him on Twitter. And he just loves Twitter. He's a Twitter fanatic. So when a typical or traditional way to get in touch with him was talk to his admin, make an appointment, hope you got on his schedule because he's a very busy man. Now you just hit him up on Twitter and, you know, very often he responds. That right there was just mind-altering for a lot of people because you now have a one-to-one access to the man that you've been following for years and his ministry.
So you're not his ghost Twitterer.
That's what a lot of people thought originally. And that's not the case. He is the guy who actually gets on Twitter, and he does sometimes get on the Facebook page and post things as well. And he does it in first person, so you know when it's him. Yeah. He does not let other people do his Twitter. He wants to send that stuff out. So that's his thing.
That's fantastic. So we're going to dispel that myth right here once and for all. That's great. Thank you.
That's him.
And then at the Potter's House, when I go there, you have something called an internet campus. So what is the internet campus that you're trying to present and create now, and what might be next down the road?
The internet campus, now when I got to the Potter's House, it was based on just having a online viewing module or screen just for weekend services. That was new. That was very hot right then. If you were streaming your services, that was great. You were cutting edge. But as I started to look at when I came on and looked at the online streaming process, I started to realize that people are going to want to mimic the offline service online. They're going to want to try and get as many features online that they can have inside the sanctuary. So that's why I started looking at the internet church concept. Right now you're seeing phase one, where you're seeing the larger video module, the interactive social media icons on the right-hand side. Because during church service, you can interact with people. You're not in a bubble during a church service. So in the pews, you're with people. So I wanted to start giving people a way to interact. Also, one of the main features, and these are the tech things that I noticed that I'm trying to help people to look at, but not, you know, don't want to point it out because I don't want them to take it from their experience. But when you click the donate button, just like in a service, when you are donating, the whole service doesn't stop. You don't want to take them away from the service. So we make sure that you're able to donate, but still stay tuned into the service that you're watching. So little stuff like that, and as well as the interactive Bible, the YouVersion Bible, we let them interact with that. So kind of similar to what you have in the service. The way we're trying to look at mimicking as many things as possible. Now, that's where we're at today, and a lot of churches are looking to catch up to that. Where we're going down the line is we're going to make it more of an online community built around the weekend services, as well as with the Potter's House, we have a television show. So we're trying to look at more multimedia that we push out in the conferences and build more of an online community aspect to it. Because right now, when you go to the service, you watch it and then you leave. There's no community aspect to it. But we want to build more of an online community aspect so you feel like you're more of an online member of the ministry, and just similar to the experiences you receive when you become a member of the offline church.
That's fantastic. And so how about some of the bigger issues that come along with online church? So what does membership look like, discipleship, baptism, and communion?
that's where we're at right now. We're trying to figure out how to work that out. And right now, with the original, well, look at the first part of that, of course, with the membership and the discipleship, we're working with training our online pastors so that they're able to lead that cause. And then also training more members to be able to be more interactive during the service. Right now, we just let people interact with Twitter, and we might throw a chat module on there as well at times. But we need more people interacting and discipling and ministering to the people that are online. So as we build that up, then we'll start to develop formal discipleship paths that they can take after they join the ministry. But we're still working on all that, and that's all on the drawing board, exactly how to work that out.
Okay, well, so be sure to let us know when you cross that line, because some churches see their internet campus as a window into their physical campus, and so it's like a funnel that people out there don't count until they step into the church building.
Right,
and some are saying, hey, if you're out at the next state or around the world, we still believe you're part of our church as well as, you know, the quote-unquote universal church, and then some were just willing to distribute their content and allow other people to form their own churches. So, you know, it's quite a spectrum and quite a journey, and would love to journey with you as you develop that.
Oh, definitely. I think I was at a church communicators event put together by Monk Development, and one of the gentlemen that were there, he spoke about instead of calling it Internet Church Campus or Internet Church, they kept calling it a ministry. It was an outreach ministry of the church, and of course they were trying to funnel people back into the campus, which was great, and I appreciate their approach. But I think that the issue that we had was our people were associating themselves with the church, whether we formalized it or not. And so we had such a large following that was not in our geographical area that we had to build it, or else they would have built it on their own. Mm-hmm. So very similar, we see internet communities of building up around brands all the time in the corporate world, whether you do it or not.
You're a multicultural church. I think I've read that somewhere. So what does the demographic breakdown look like in the physical church?
Demographic breakdown, if I'm not mistaken, and don't quote me because I haven't read that, I believe it's 65% African-American, 20% Latino, 10% Caucasian, and I think the other 5% is, I'm not sure what those races are.
Maybe Asian?
Not sure. Don't quote me. I haven't seen a lot of Asian members in the church, though.
Maybe they're online. You just can't see the faces.
Oh, I believe it. I wish I knew what the demographic breakdown was of the online church, because that's where I see thousands of more people than what I see in traditional service.
Are there some things that social media needs to make some adjustment for the non-white audience? Because most of the online church leaders that I've been talking with are white.
I think I just think it's more so with the educational aspect, because a lot of my training came from interacting with traditionally white churches, because prior to, in addition to working with T.D. Jakes and Fred Price's church in L.A., I've worked with Fellowship Church out here in Dallas with Ed Young, and that's traditionally majority Caucasian church, and then I've worked with Rick Warren's church out in Orange County. So those traditionally Caucasian churches, when I looked at their practices and the teams that I work with out there in those churches, that kind of gave me a lot of the foundations for the approaches that I took towards the traditionally African-American churches. So I just think that when I'm looking at these approaches for traditionally African-American churches, you have to educate the users more because of twofold. One, technology is not as rapidly adopted in the African-American community. And then two, a lot of the church members build up the following around the pastor as opposed to the church. So therefore, sometimes you get a following around the individual as opposed to the actual church. And that just gives a little different aspect to it.
Okay, those are good thoughts. Any questions you have for our listeners who are tuned in here at Social Media Church?
Yeah, I do. I do wonder, as far as social media, the church and social media, what have you seen as far as what is the usage in terms of Facebook versus Twitter? Because I'm looking at the main two, and of course I could go all the way down the line with Google+. But what do you see as far as the traditional usage, as far as Facebook versus Twitter? And then I got a follow-up question to that as far as, have you seen any churches using Twitter successfully?
Mm. Well, very good. I'll dig through my notes. I have a handful of churches that do use Twitter more than Facebook. And then there's a lot more that are active in just Facebook because the majority of people are there. Mm-hmm. And so the thing with technology that I tend to lean into is, well, I'll go where people are rather than trying to make them come into my private walled garden network or somewhere else. It just adds more hurdle. And in Facebook talk, that's friction. And you want to make the experience as frictionless as possible.
Absolutely. Which, you know, you made me think of something. Have you seen any churches doing this new technology I just saw? Well, Facebook has had it for a while, but it's the seamless sharing, and where Facebook allows you to share without having to click share. Just as you go to the page, you actually share the stuff. Now, we know in a church environment, actually ShareThis.com has the tool that you can add to your site to do that. But have you seen any churches doing that? Because here's the question that I had about it. Where would be the best place for churches to put it? Because we know they can't put it on sensitive pages, obviously, for people, church members dealing with sensitive issues that they don't want everybody in their social networks to know. But on the other hand, it's a benefit for churches if they put it on, say, the e-church page or the internet church page to let people know, I'm watching this right now, come watch with me. But have you seen any churches implementing anything like that?
I haven't come across it yet, but maybe one of our listeners will chime in with what they've seen. I don't know if you know, I'm not omniscient, so I need people to help me see what else is going on out there and chime in. So that'd be great. That'd be great to hear. It kind of annoys me to just share my opinion about seamless sharing, because there was a web reader. I think Washington Post had a web reader that was really integrated into Facebook, and every article you read, it would post to your wall.
Yeah.
And then when you try to click on someone else, what someone else is reading, they make you install that app. I'm like, I don't want to install more apps. I've got way too many apps as it is. I want to try to, you know, streamline and simplify my online experience. And it just frustrated me.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. I think I only liked the ESPN one because I'm a sports fanatic. So, yeah, I did that. But, yeah, like you said, the Wall Street Journal. There was another one. I'm not sure if it was Yahoo or Huffington Post or something like that. A couple of those that made me do that as well. That just, you know, if it's not exactly what I want and I want to jump over the wall to get to it, then no, you're going to lose my attention and I'm gone.
Mm-hmm. So what tablet do you use?
I actually use an iPad, the new iPad 3, whatever you want to call it, all day. But now, it's funny that you brought that up. Just last night, a young lady asked me about what should she buy as a tablet. And she said she was on a budget, so she didn't want to spend – she wanted an iPad. She didn't want to spend a whole bunch. And I played with a Nexus 7, the Google tablet, and wow, I'm impressed. Unless the Apple drops an iPad mini, I would push that on people on a budget before pushing them to an iPad.
Okay, so I'll have to go check that out in the store and maybe buy it on that too. I'm on an iPad 2 myself.
Well, here's the thing. Now, I'm an Apple fanatic. I'm an Apple enthusiast, an Apple all day. But, and I have an iPhone. Whole family has iPods, the whole night, Apple TV. My at TD Jakes Ministries, they got me an Android, new Droid Razor with not the latest operating system, not Jelly Bean, but Ice Cream. And until I had that phone, I would have shot Android down 10 times out of 10. But that phone and the Android system and what they're the latest stuff they're coming out with, yeah, competition breeds innovation. So Apple needs to stay on their toes, because I'm not jumping ship to Android, but I'm no longer an avid person against them. They're really good.
Yeah, there's a lot of good technology that's maturing in more than one family, so that's neat to see.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, you mentioned your main role, and this is my last question. Your main role is keeping up with the latest in technology, so what helps you to do that? What blogs do you read, or do you have research assistants?
I wish I did have a research assistant, but no, actually, I have used my Google Reader avidly, so I probably read, probably 50 blogs a day, but I get a feed of maybe probably easily 300, and I'm just scanning through titles of what's new. I know I read a lot of TechCrunch and TechMeme and Apple stuff and all the Google blogs, and again, it's just fed right into my Google Reader, so I got it organized by online business, new technology, video games, and stuff like that. So as I'm reading through all these blogs, every time I come to a blog, if it's anything interesting, then I'll add it to my Google Reader. And every day, every morning, I probably have 500, 600, 700 blogs, and I'm not reading them all, so I don't want to sound like I'm a super reader. No, I read probably 10 to 50 of them, and that depends on the title. So if the title's great, then I open it up. If not, then I'm going to keep moving in. But that's how I stay updated on all the technology. And then from there, I just, as I see something new that we can utilize, or either I'll blog about it, go present it to the ministry as far as how we can use it or save it as a nugget for my next book coming out.
Yeah, so what's the next book?
The next book, I will be releasing the next book via Volume 2. It'll be called Church in the Cloud, and it will still focus on the same five topics that I focus on in this one, which is websites, multimedia, e-commerce, social media, and mobile. And then I also add a section on cloud, how churches can use the cloud for their IT infrastructure, and also add another section on internet church and that concept I was explaining earlier about how to implement that and the tools that are out here, you know, like Church Online and other people that have great tools that they can use.
And that was my conversation with Jason Kasten online. And last week, I actually got to connect with Jason Kasten in person over a burger time while I was in Dallas for some business with Leadership Network. And we really had a great time connecting, even though he has a rather impressive online presence. He's not intimidating at all in person and rather personable. So we connected really well. The good food helped as well. I'll give a shout out to Smashburger, although my preference is Five Guys any day. But I wanted to change the pace on that particular meetup, tweetup. And a few of the topics that we chatted about was just the challenge of connecting with church leaders and trying to do some networking. And whether it's theological convictions and differences or just the all-consuming nature of ministry that keeps us from making that extra effort, which it does take some effort to connect with other church leaders, to trade notes, learn from each other, and build those relationships. When I do find people that are open to doing that, it's always a joy to me. So I'm so glad that Jason is like-minded in that sense. And I think social media just opens up huge opportunities that don't take as much effort, though it still does take effort to connect with each other online using social media. And so just as you're connected in here listening to this podcast, I would ask you to spread the word and invite others into this conversation here at Social Media Church. The other thing I was curious about is what's it like to work with Bishop T.D. Jakes? And the way I heard Jason describe it is that he is a rather disciplined and a business savvy person, the consummate professional, if you will. And so he really takes his position of influence and his gifts and stewards it well so that he can serve as many people as he can through his ministry, as well as through his business endeavors, whether it's movies or music or books or conferences. And I'm sure there's a number of other things that he does. And as Jason has given us the scoop that Bishop Jakes does his own Twittering, that he keeps himself available and accessible to the masses, doesn't feel like he has to shield himself per se. And there's at least one way to get a hold of him and to say hello and to say thank you. And so for all the efforts that he's done in not only building a ministry, but providing professional development and business development that really creates jobs for hundreds, perhaps thousands of people so that they can also make their contribution in the world. Thank you, Bishop Jakes. And thank you, Jason. It's so great to connect with you in person and online. And I think I've made a friend for years to come. So we'll see where that conversation goes, how that relationship grows, and keep your eyes out for his second book about Church in the Cloud. This concludes another episode of the Social Media Church. My name is DJ Chuang, and until next time, we'll stay connected online.